Dr. Rana Haje is director of the Division of Bacterial Diseases at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Doctor, congratulations on being selected as a finalist in the National Security and International Affairs category for the Service to America medals. First of all, I'm going to take a crack at this. Is it the Haemophilus influenza type B that is the HIB that your work is involved with? Thank you very much for your time today.
Sure. Sure. Thank you for having me. Yes, the Haemophilus influenzae type B is a bacteria that causes pneumonia, severe pneumonia and meningitis in children.
And a vaccine that was commonly used in the United States had pretty much killed it here and in other industrialized countries, according to the profile of the Partnership for Public Service. But there were many other places around the world where that wasn't the case. Why was that, Doctor?
Sure. Yeah, this vaccine has been available in the U.S. since 1990. Actually, my own daughter was among the first children in the U.S. to receive it when she was born in 1990. It's been a problem getting the developing countries to have the vaccine. First, it used to be expensive, and then the countries didn't really know much about how much disease they have and how much the vaccine can actually help them, because the bacteria itself, the HIB bacteria, I'll just use the short name for it, is very difficult to isolate, to actually find in the laboratory. It is it's a bacteria that can easily be affected by antibiotics and also by various environmental factors. So, for example, if you take fluid from the spine, which is typically what we do to diagnose meningitis, and you leave it out in the lab for a little bit over an hour, then the bacteria dies. It's very fragile. So, and most of the developing countries don't really have a very strong laboratory infrastructure that can help with the diagnostics. So, so that's why the countries really did not know how much disease they have. And as a result, you know what, you're not afraid of what you don't know. So they didn't really think this was a big problem for them. So we had to support a lot of the studies that helped bringing this to their attention. But also we had to make them aware of how much work has been done in the field, you know, both all over the world, but often in their own countries or in the region that they are in.
You became director of the HIB Initiative in 2005. Tell me about the mission of the HIB Initiative and where it took you.
Sure, yeah. The HIB Initiative was funded by Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccine and Immunization, and it's a private-public partnership that aims mainly at introducing life-saving vaccines in developing countries. So this is like a mechanism that pools funding from the various donors all over the world, whether governments or industry, academic institutions, and other public health institutions, in order to reach that objective. And when they started in 2000, they actually offered some of the vaccines that were available at the time, including HIB, specifically was HIB mainly and hepatitis. They offered them completely free of charge to these countries. For countries to be eligible for the Gavi funding, they have to be very poor. And at the time, back in 2000, it was countries that had a GNI less than $1,000, basically. So, but even with the vaccines offered free, the countries were not taking them, were not asking for them, which really baffled Gavi, because up till then it was thought that this is just about cost. So in 2005, they decided to fund the HIB Initiative. The HIB Initiative was actually a grant given to a consortium of institutions, also that included private public partners and included the WHO, London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine in the UK, as well as Johns Hopkins University and the CDC in the US. And the project was based at Johns Hopkins. And the main mission of the HIB Initiative was to accelerate the evidence-based decisions for these vaccines in the countries. We didn't want to push them on the countries. We wanted countries to make decisions based on evidence to, you know, whether they should introduce these vaccines or not.
In 2004, according to the profile from the Partnership for Public Service, only 13 of 73 countries that qualified for the grants were taking the money and getting the shots. What was the process you went through, Dr., to get those other 60 countries to come on board and see that these were preventable diseases that were killing their kids?
Yes, this was a lot of work, 24/7, as we say at CDC. We basically relied on three strategies. I mean, our plan included three main areas, which is We had to fill the research gaps because there were lots of gaps in the understanding about the disease and the vaccine. And then we had to do a lot of communications and advocacy directly with these countries and with their decision makers in particular to ensure they have the right information. And then we had coordination of all the various activities that needed to be in place for these vaccines to be introduced smoothly and safely in the country. So it was really relying on three areas: communications and advocacy, coordination, and research. And the communications involved a lot of meetings, a lot of travel, and then meeting directly with people who are actually making the decision, which up till then was not really done. So this often wasn't your typical just Ministry of Health. I mean, it included high-level Ministry of Health officials, obviously, but also included many stakeholders such as Ministry of Finance, because obviously they were the ones who were supposed to co-finance the vaccine. The Gavi had asked the countries to pay a small percentage of the cost, often it was less than 10%, just to improve country ownership of the program. So that involved, that meant the involvement of multiple partners at the country level, and we often had to go to the countries to bring all these partners and stakeholders to the table and explain to them all at the same time, you know, why this is important and what the vaccines can do, how can they monitor the impact, etc.
Dr. Rana Hajje and the HIB initiative team at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, finalists in the 2014 National Security and International Affairs Medal in the Service to America Medals. You can read more about their work at federalnewsradio.com. I'm curious, when you went to these high-level ministers, Doctor, what was the reception that you got from them, and what was their perception of somebody from the United States, even though you were coming in cooperation with these other organizations you talked about? What was the perception of somebody from the United States coming to them and saying, we're here to help you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this was a bit tricky, and we actually worked quite a bit even before we went to the countries on, you know, on our messages and also on how, you know, how we should present ourselves. I mean, we were going really as a, even though I am a CDC employee, you know, and I was assigned to this project, but we were going as a global partnership, and we often, you know, had done our exercise, our homework before going, and understood the decision-making process at the country level. We knew all the key partners. We had communicated with them before. So I think the work we did, all the legwork we did before going to the country, was really important in helping improve our perception. There was a little bit of a concern initially about, you know, the global partners trying to push vaccines on countries or serving industry benefits. You know, this is always a concern, but I think they were very happy to see, you know, that we were supporting an evidence-based process. We often, you know, we're communicating with them directly. I have to say it helped a lot. Also, with you know, having communicating it often directly in the language that you know, that countries understood. I mean, this was a big issue we found during our work. The communications process, a lot of things got lost in the communications. You know, in West Africa, for example, they really needed to hear the same messages in French. You know, so all the materials we did, we translated to French. I mean, I happen to be also Francophone, and you know, I speak Arabic as my first language. So it helped me also in the Middle East, but it helped a lot to have languages, I mean, the materials translated to languages countries could directly read and understand. Same thing in Eastern Europe. We found that Russian was, you know, an important, this is really the main language that officials still use, and the medical professionals. So we had to do that. And we worked very closely with medical societies and civil societies at the country level as well to improve the perception and the collaboration regarding the vaccine introduction.
Your profile says the HIB initiative officially ended March 20th, 2014. It sounds like it ended successfully. If you started at 13 for 73 and added 60, I get 73 out of 73, even though my math is not that good, Doctor. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
What do you do to follow up on this? Where are you headed next?
Well, I mean, we wanted to make sure, like, all the lessons we learned and the work we supported is shared with the rest of the world. So we actually published all of the studies that we supported in a supplement in a journal of pediatrics over the summer. And, you know, there were many other publications on lessons learned that came from, because this is not just about HIB vaccine. This is about how to help countries making evidence-based decisions about introducing other life-saving vaccines or other public health interventions. It's the same evidence-based process that requires strong science as well as adequate communications and coordination. So, you know, right now I'm working on other vaccines. I'm part of another initiative that supports right now the introduction of pneumococcal vaccine, another vaccine that prevents also severe pneumonia in children, and rotavirus vaccines, you know, that's the working with Gavi to prevent diarrhea, another major cause of death in children. I'm working you know, also on many other activities to support systems in these countries that help them evaluate the impact of the vaccines, you know, the surveillance systems and others, as many countries right now are under pressure to reach their Millennium Developmental Goal 4, which is to reduce child mortality by two-thirds between 2000 and 2015. So countries need to really document that they're able to do that. So I'm working on improving, helping countries, you know, develop systems and introduce interventions to reach their goals. But also I'm working on other child health and development projects, because once the kids survive, you really want them to reach their full potential. So I think moving on beyond just child survival to child quality of life and development is crucial.